Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Black Brick by Dan Decker. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Black Brick. Last week, we read, "You must admit that his cover is very good," Shannon said. "I would never have suspected Peck of being our boss." "This smells," I said. "I trust Beltran and Peck to see the big picture. Do you?" "What about the innocent people that have been hurt by our methods?" I asked. "Pain bombed that train. Stop blaming yourself." 11 of the dead were children. Beltran knew Pain would be following Lauren and did not tell us. Beltran cannot tell the future any better than you or me. I thought about how Tom had shot at the police during our escape the other day. "Would the President or Congress condone our recent actions?" I asked. "Of course not," Shannon said. "That's why Peck called this a dark gray area. The trail of bodies behind us continues to grow." "You need to get past this," Shannon said. I did not respond because I could tell I was getting nowhere with her. Right before our conversation with Peck, she had expressed to me her doubts. Now that Peck had said his piece, she was not concerned any longer. Whatever had been bothering her was no longer an issue. Peck had managed to allay Shannon's concerns, but mine were continuing to grow. And now? 22. I tapped my fingers on the wheel while I waited for our parking receipt to print. I had a bad feeling about today, and I could not do anything to shake it. I was afraid that Martinez had planted the evidence that had led us to the bookstore in the mall. I had tried convincing Beltran that it was a trap, but he was insistent that we would be careful. Once the ticket appeared, I grabbed it and proceeded into the mall parking garage. It had been close to 45 minutes since Peck had called Beltran. Payne was due to leave soon. "Are you going to keep your head on straight?" Beltran asked as I parked. It was the first time Beltran had accompanied me on a mission in some time. While he had not said as much, I believed it was because he did not trust Shannon to not shoot Payne as soon as she saw him. She was waiting a block away and would pull up to the mall once we had grabbed Payne. Beltran probably figured it would be safer that way. But I would not put it past her to blow him away once we had him in custody. "I was wondering the same thing about you," I said, ignoring his gaze as I parked. I refrained from slamming the door as I left the car and headed up into the mall. Beltran would follow me in a few minutes. This was insane, and Beltran knew it. A takedown in public like this was not going to be a smooth process, especially because we were dealing with a madman who had already proven his ability to kill indiscriminately. The food court was packed, and as I passed by a mother with a baby, I considered warning them to leave, but could not because that would risk blowing our cover. Beltran might believe these people were safe, but I could not convince myself that was the case. Cherry, who had come over a few minutes before us with Tom, was already sitting at a table in the middle of the courtyard sipping on a drink. The bookstore was visible from where she was sitting. She looked relaxed, but underneath that calm exterior, I was sure she was still conflicted in her feelings for Martinez. Tom was eating a sandwich nearby, and it was obvious that I was not the only one unhappy with this plan. I circled around the courtyard looking like I was trying to make a decision for dinner. It would not fool Martinez or Payne if they spotted me, but it did not hurt to keep up the pretense. Nobody jumped out as being particularly worrisome, but neither had the woman I had shot the other morning. Beltran entered the food court at the same time I got in line to buy a pretzel. He looked my direction, but did not make eye contact. How long had it been since he had been in the field? This was his first mission with us in more than 6 months. I purchased my pretzel, pulled out my phone, and pretended to make a call. Every so often, I took a small bite as I chatted away with my imaginary friend. After Beltran had purchased Chinese food from a place that sold it by the plate, he sat at a bar and pulled out his phone to read. 15 minutes later, when I noted that Beltran had finally taken a bite of the food, I had long since finished my pretzel. The plan was to wait for Payne to come out of the bookstore before grabbing him. If everything went according to plan, we would be leaving the building at the same time Shannon pulled up. There was a sudden movement on the second level just above the food court that drew my attention. My hand was halfway to my pistol before I noticed that it was just some kids playing around. I looked back at the woman with the baby and could not help but feel relief that they had left. That was when I noticed that she had left the baby carrier underneath the table. I took a step towards it and saw the baby was still in the carrier. Several steps closer, and I could see it was a doll and could just make out some wiring. Cursing, I wished that I had tried harder to keep Beltran from doing this. I turned to Beltran. He was looking right at me. "Bomb," I said. Several people nearby looked up when I spoke, but Beltran was already walking away before I repeated it again. "Bomb," I cried out. "Everybody run." People around me were slowly starting to look around, and the talk began to subside. I repeated myself and ran towards a table of children. The adult women on the table had not heard me. I grabbed two of them by the shoulders. "Take your children and run," I yelled. "There is a bomb." One of the women scooped up a young boy who dropped his hamburger and started to cry. The other grabbed one of the other children, but several were too small to understand the sudden urgency in their mother's voice. I picked up both of them and ran towards the glass doors, yelling as I went. I had just set the children down on a spot of grass when a deep, rumbling explosion blasted out the glass doors of the entrance. I put my arms around the children, pushing them down to the ground underneath me. When it was over, I shook my head, trying to clear it. I did not realize that the children were crying until I saw their tear-streaked faces. Not knowing how to comfort them, I surveyed the scene. Both Cherry and Tom had made it out. Cherry was helping an older woman, and I could make out the tears running down Cherry's face. I wondered what was going through her mind. Martinez had just tried to kill her. She had not said as much, but I could tell that Cherry had been hoping that Martinez's feelings for her would offer her some protection. Whatever had happened between them, she had believed it was real. What a cruel way for it to be ripped away. The glass doors were shattered, and smoke was billowing out. I recognized one of the women from the table and went to her, asking if she was all right. She did not hear me, and my own voice sounded far away. I looked her over and determined that she was going to be okay. Her face had been scuffed up, but the child she carried was more or less unharmed. I went in search of the other mother. I found her just before the glass doors. The explosion had knocked her to the ground, and her head was bleeding. I saw movement underneath her and pulled out a young boy. He was crying, and his face was covered in blood. I pulled off my jacket and did my best to wipe off the boy's face. It was a tedious task, but I determined that the boy's scraped face was the only place he was bleeding. I put the boy in the jacket and took him to the other woman. I had just returned to the wounded woman when a second smaller explosion sent me covering her. I stayed on my knees to keep from hurting her further. When it was over, I decided to risk moving her in case there were still more bombs. I carried the woman over to her children. She opened her eyes when I set her on the ground. One of the children pounced on her, and she tried to say something soothing, but it came out as a gurgle. I realized several moments too late that I should not have brought her over. Her children did not need to see her like this. It might be their final memory of her. The woman reached for the boy but could not quite put her arm around him. I helped her arm up into an embrace of the child. The other woman placed the young crying boy that was wrapped in my jacket on the woman's chest. She took a final look at her children and then stopped breathing. I felt utterly powerless as I surveyed the scene, tears falling down my face. Tom and Cherry were already walking away. I needed to do the same, but was still in shock and not thinking too clearly. Close to 50 people had made it out before the explosion. I tried not to think of all those who had still been inside when the bomb had gone off. Out of the corner of my eye, an individual caught my attention. I focused on him and recognized him from behind. It was Payne. He had walked calmly from the burning mall. The arrogance of the man filled me with rage. Letting go of the woman as gently as I could, I chased after him, taking my pistol out as I did. When I noticed that he was heading towards a car that had just pulled up, I ran faster until I saw I could not make it in time. Coming to a halt, I brought up my pistol, took aim, and fired. The first shot went through a window on the passenger side and out the driver's side. Glass fell to the street as Payne opened the door and jumped in, ducking down. By that time, I was already on my fourth shot. The second had missed, having gone into the door, but the third might have been a hit. As the car sped away, I continued to shoot. The rear windshield cracked, but maintained its integrity. Even though they were out of range, I fired several more shots until they turned a corner. Cursing, I ran up to the street corner, where the car had been moments before and found some blood in addition to the broken glass. I had hit him. Hoping it was a fatal shot, or at least a wound bad enough to force him to the hospital, I took off at a run. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.